The Cubit by Peter Galarno Jr. Part 1. Endangered. Summer 2007. Lenny's mother had warned him about the dangers of hitchhiking.
"I said, let me out of this car!"
The driver's fist struck Lenny's left eye. The driver growled,
"And I said, shut your goddamn mouth!"
The station wagon fishtailed around the sharp corner at Pickett's Crossing and accelerated, sending a box the size of a small coffin to the back of the cargo bay and into the rear hatch. Behind them in close pursuit fishtailed two Kansas State police cruisers. The lead cruiser lost its slide, hit the gravel shoulder, and scraped the guardrail with a metal-to-metal screech that easily overpowered its siren. The old man began mumbling again, talking to the steering wheel, slamming his large fist against its hard plastic. He looked in the rearview mirror and then abruptly at Lenny.
"See? I told you they were chasing me! Christ, they're gonna kill us both!"
The old man whimpered. His eyes drooped. Wrinkles rippled from the horrified brown marbles in sagging circular waves. He'd not slept in a long time. At least, that's the story he'd given Lenny when he'd picked him up that afternoon. Lenny had been waiting for an hour at a 76 station near I-70 when the dusty 1984 Oldsmobile Custom station wagon had pulled in. "Where are you headed?" the old man had asked while topping off his tank. "Pickett's Crossing, Kansas."
"Kansas?"
the old man had scratched his gray stubby chin.
"Yeah," he'd said. "Kansas. They'll never think of that."
"Excuse me?" Standing on the other side of the pump, Lenny had not heard the old man's mumble.
"Oh, nothing. Forgive an old man and his blabbering. I've not slept in several days."
He'd replaced the pump, had plucked a 20 from a thick wad of bills, and had shoved it at the station attendant who'd walked from the garage to stare precariously when the old man had pulled in.
"Come on, son. We got miles to cross."
Just a lonely soul out for a relaxing weekend drive, Lenny had thought. A simple farmer who'd suddenly decided that Pickett's Crossing, Kansas, would make a wonderful destination, even if it was 500 miles out of his way. And the wad of money? His life savings? Or more realistically, blood money picked from a dead convenience store clerk, bank teller, or gas station attendant. Lenny should have known. He should have listened to his mother. It wasn't until they'd crossed the Missouri line into Kansas that Lenny had become concerned. The old man had become increasingly jittery, keeping his eyes more on the falling sun than on the road. He'd stopped talking about his lovely wife, who died a few years back, about his grandkids, one of which had died recently, and about the beautiful state of Missouri and all the good years he'd lived there. Then, when the sun had disappeared and night had grown dense, the old man had clammed up altogether. He'd stared at length in his rearview mirror, often weaving across the four-lane interstate and onto the grass median or rocky shoulder like a blindfolded drunk driver. That's when Lenny had noticed the box. Turning out of curiosity to see what attracted so much of the old man's attention, Lenny had seen it in the cargo area shoved tightly against the backside of the rear seat, a wooden box the size of a small coffin. Lenny had remembered their earlier conversation, the recent tragic death of the old man's 3-year-old grandson, and Lenny had wondered. The box seemed to be just about the right size for...
"Shit!"
the old man grumbled as one of the police cruisers rammed the tail of the station wagon. The old man hit the brakes. The cruiser collided with the tail bumper. Glass from the rear hatch imploded, and the coffin rushed backward, then forward, crashing into the backside of the rear seat as splinters of window stabbed Lenny's head and neck. The crumpled front end of the police cruiser sped up alongside the station wagon and veered into the rear door behind the old man. The squelch of the police cruiser's PA startled Lenny.
"Pull the fuck over, Professor Cower! You ain't got no escape this time. We'll make sure of that!"
Lenny saw two uniformed outlines in the front seat of the cruiser. The passenger raised his revolver and fired. Lenny flinched as the bullet webbed the front windshield, having missed his nose by the smallest inch.
"I'm gonna blow your goddamn head off," the officer warned, "if you don't stop this shit right now."
The second cruiser came up from behind and smacked the tail of the station wagon as the lead cruiser continued to press the car from the left. Suddenly, the professor jerked the steering wheel hard to the right. Lenny saw the rushing guardrail as it snaked by his door at 60 miles an hour. He lowered his head and clutched the seat, readying himself for impact. But none came. The professor had found a side road, had abruptly turned onto it, Lenny raised his head in time to see the fiery inferno as the police cruisers collided, flipped, split the guardrail, and disappeared in a tumbling blaze down a steep embankment on the far side of the road. The professor sat rigid. His foot seemed glued to the accelerator pedal. Stalks of corn a month from harvest sped by on either side of the station wagon, slapped the headlights and windshield as if trying to prevent passage. "Okay, kid, where to now?" he grumbled. The voice seemed far away. Lenny's mind was too busy sorting out the terror of being kidnapped and shot at. Hell, the cop's bullet had almost taken his head off. He stared at the windshield, his left eye swelling, and imagined his brain scattered across the dashboard, blood pasted in sticky masses to the webbed glass. Absently, he groped his face with his fingertips, assuring himself that his head was still there. "Kid," someone was saying. God, how he hated that name. His stepfather had always called him that. The wife-beating alcoholic had once threatened to blow Lenny's brains out, had placed a .44 Magnum handgun right to his temple, and had pulled back the hammer. "Okay, kid," he'd slurred. "Tell me who the fuck your mama's been whoring around with." Of course, his mother had never whored around with anyone. The accusation was his stepfather's Jim Beam delusion, and Lenny had told him so. That's when his stepfather had pulled the trigger on an empty weapon. Click! And Lenny had seen his brains and blood scattered throughout his bedroom in much the same colorful way as he now saw them stuck to the windshield. The fear of death in 3D Technicolor. It had made him sick then, as it did now. "God damn it, kid! You're from around here! How do I get back to the main road?" The professor pulled a gun from under the seat and pointed it at him. "I said, how do we get the fu-" Lenny puked in a thin stream onto the dashboard, then turned and continued spraying across the gun in the professor's lap. "Shit!" the professor yelled and stomped the brake pedal. The station wagon quickly jumped off the dirt road into the cornfield, sliced through green stalks, and settled into a cloud of heavy dust. The professor quickly opened his door and rolled out. "Shit! Shit! Shit!" he growled as he scoured his lap with dirt and crumpled stalks. Lenny had the opportunity to run, but his stomach was in control of the situation. He hiccuped a tiny amount of bile and rolled out of the car. The crisp smell of broken corn stalks deodorized the acidic stench of vomit. He took a deep breath, removed his shirt, and wiped his mouth and chin, then spit the remaining taste. The professor crossed in front of the station wagon's headlights, and Lenny turned to run. "Wait!" the professor demanded. Lenny stood still, believing the gun was pointed at his spine. "Please! I need your help." "You might as well shoot," Lenny said. "I'm not aiding and abetting any criminal." "Ease up. I don't have the gun. And even if I did, I wouldn't shoot you." Lenny heard the shuffle of the professor's feet, felt him at his back. "Turn around, for God's sake!" Lenny thrashed out as he turned, throwing a kick to the groin and a backhand to the face. But the professor was quick, too quick for someone who looked to be nearly 60 years old. He kicked Lenny's leg out from under him while grabbing his wrist in the same motion, then tossed Lenny aside as if batting away an annoying insect. "Listen," the professor knelt. "I haven't enough time for this. You're just going to have to trust me." The professor stared into the broken cornfield. His eyes were wild, intense. His nose flared, sucking in deep breaths. His hands played nervously with broken cornstalks. "They won't stop until they retrieve the cubit," he whispered to the summer breeze, acknowledging some fact that apparently scared the living hell out of him. "The cubit?" Lenny said. The professor grabbed Lenny's arm and pulled as he rose. "Sorry about all of this. I shouldn't have involved you. It's just that I needed some help. I'm getting tired. They won't let me sleep. The last time I had a solid meal was in Philly, and that was 2 days ago." "I thought you said you were from Missouri," Lenny said, backing a step from the professor's wrinkled stare. "I lied." "And your wife? Your grandkids?" "Dead, as I've said. Murdered in their sleep the night I took off." Murdered, Lenny thought. Now that made more sense than any of the lies the professor had told so far. Of course they'd been murdered. By the good professor, no doubt. The police chase, the gun under his seat, his crazy mood swings and occasional unleashed anger, each a checkmark in the yes column for Lenny's description of a psychotic killer on the run. "Hey, kid, listen to me." The professor grabbed Lenny's shoulders and Lenny flinched. "I'm not going to hurt you. You got that?" Lenny's tears dropped and the professor shoved him away. His eyebrows drew tight with anger. The folds around his eyes deepened. "You think I killed him, don't you? Don't you?" Lenny nodded. "It wasn't me, damn it," he He slammed a fist against his thigh. It wasn't me! Suddenly the professor stiffened. He looked around like a bloodhound on the scent. The station wagon had traveled 20 yards from the dirt road into the cornfield. The engine had died, but the lights were still on. The rear hatch had opened, and lying in the trampled stalks halfway between the station wagon and the road was the box. It lay askew on a tiny ridge of plowed earth and glowed red from the taillights. Lenny stared at it, thought that a 3-year-old could easily fit inside, that maybe a wife, if chopped finely enough, could have been stuffed inside as well. The box shifted on the mound of earth as if something alive was inside, and then a knock. Knuckles on wood. Something inside the box wanted out. The rapping of knuckles turned into the thrashing of fists as the trap beat feverishly from within the box. "Let them out," came a voice, seemingly from within the box. The pronunciation was slow, disoriented, sounding like a cassette tape running at half speed. "Let them out now." Standing on the dirt road, a shadow highlighted in pink, was one of the state troopers. "Can't you see they want out, Professor?" the trooper said while raising his revolver. "Tough shit," the professor responded, standing near the open passenger door, eyeing the gun that lay in a puddle of puke on the front seat. The trooper fired and the professor jerked backwards. Lenny dropped to his knees as the professor dove through the shattered rear passenger door window, flipped into the car, and grabbed the gun. The trooper ran into the plowed lane created by the station wagon as the professor brought his gun out and steadied it on the roof of the car. Bang! The trooper lifted off the ground and fell flat on his back, 10 feet from the box. Lenny crouched at the professor's heels, wondering what to do. Everything was moving too fast. There was too much information and too little time to sort it out. Murders, gunfights, psycho killers, come on! He was just hitchhiking home to see his mother, for Christ's sake. "Let them out," the trooper had said. Let who out? Of what? Shouldn't his demand have been, "Halt, you crazy, murderous scumbag, or I'll blow your damned head off"? Didn't anyone watch TV around here? Stop thinking, Lenny, and act. Save your ass. Get the gun from the professor. Lenny dove at the back of the professor's legs, yanked them up and away, and the professor went down. He grabbed the gun and pointed it at the professor's head. "Enough of this shit, you hear me?" The gun shook in his hands. His voice trembled. His body quivered. This was much different than in the movies. Real guns. Real blood. Really a matter of life or death. You stay there or I'll blow your... "Go ahead. Say it. Or I'll blow your goddamn head off. Clint Eastwood would say it. Hell, he'd do it. He loved blowing holes in things." But Lenny couldn't say it. Couldn't do it. He just wanted to go home and get this nightmare over with. Fortunately for Lenny's cowardice, the professor was in no shape to go anywhere. The trooper had shot him in the right breast, and his stomach was gashed open from the shards of window glass that he dove through to get the gun. His mouth worked as if he were chewing gum, and Lenny moved closer, pointing the gun haphazardly at the bullet hole in the professor's chest. "Watch out!" the professor gasped, and slid an arm through the crumpled corn stalks with his index finger pointed in the direction of the felled trooper. Lenny jerked, thinking the professor was stretching for some hidden weapon. "You killed him, man," Lenny said, now steadying the gun with both hands. "There's nothing to watch out for except you." That's what Clint Eastwood would say, he thought. "No, not dead. Never dead. Watch out." Blood trickled from the corner of the professor's mouth, and red bubbles escaped as he coughed up more. In the distance, a gun fired, and Lenny felt the buzz of a giant insect nip his left ear. He turned. The trooper advanced with his revolver raised. Lenny dropped as the trooper fired another round. "Hey!" Lenny yelled. "I'm innocent! I'm one of the good guys!" "Don't let him get the cubit," the professor moaned. "Trust me!" He closed his eyes and exhaled. "The cubit? What?" The trooper had acquired the box and was now carrying it back toward the road. "Hey, professor! He's got the cubit, professor!" His hands shook. He wasn't Clint Eastwood. In fact, his actions resembled those of Clint Eastwood's victims. Men too big for their britches. Men too scared to draw and shoot straight. Men who were kids.
"What are you gonna do, kid? Draw or whistle Dixie?"
The state trooper turned and fired again. The bullet missed his head by fractions of an inch. He heard it buzzing, like a fly stuck in his ear. Was he actually going to shoot a cop?
"You gotta start living, or you gotta start dying.
Yes, Clint, I know,
Lenny yelled out, then squinted and fired two rounds. The trooper flinched and returned fire as Lenny dropped face first near the rear bumper of the station wagon. Something stung his shoulder. Glass shattered in the distance. His right arm went numb, and, lying face down in the cornfield, he transferred the gun to his left hand. This was it. He was going to die. He should have known better than to ignore his mother. He should not have hitchhiked. Hitchhiking was the same as stealing, she'd say, and stealing was against God's commandments. He could see her crooked finger slashing the sign of the cross in a cumulative gesture of accusation and forgiveness. The crunch of snapping corn stalks assaulted his ears, and a scorched black shoe appeared in front of his nose. The trooper's pant leg was burned away, and in the red taillight luminance, a bare, bubbled calf and shin offered Lenny the nauseating odor of burned flesh. A shoe heel prodded Lenny's spine. A toe poked his ribs. Lenny gasped. The trooper's breath became deep and excited, sounding like a mad scientist who'd just seen the first jerky signs of life from his monster masterpiece. And then... click! It was his stepfather again, pointing and firing an empty .44 at his head. Again, the visions of brains and blood in his bedroom, across the dashboard. His stomach churned.
Not this time, coward, Clinton had the nerve to remind him. You keep that puke to yourself. Click, click, click.
Lenny quickly rolled and lifted his gun with a wavering left hand, leveled it at... but it couldn't be alive. The trooper? This thing? It stood naked. Bone poked through brittle black skin across the length of its body. Its genitals, dangling directly in Lenny's line of sight, resembled an unattended weenie roast at a Boy Scout camp. The pin from the trooper's badge punctured its left breast and dangled from abused, blackened tissue. The badge had a bullet hole through its center. The flesh around the thing's lips, nose, and eyes was totally burned away, leaving a grin full of teeth, a white stare, and a broken jaw. It struggled to breathe, sucking air through dime-sized holes just above the charred gum line as it gawked with two lidless eyeballs down the barrel of Lenny's gun. But this was a human being, wasn't it? Lenny thought. What if the guy was just burned real bad? Maybe the fire had gotten to his brain and had burned some part of his logical center. He could be just whacked out, disabled, not knowing what the hell was going on. Yeah, that had to be it. Lenny couldn't shoot someone who wasn't responsible for their own actions. Besides... it was against God's commandments to murder.
Shoot the motherfucker, Clint demanded.
The thing that had been a Kansas State trooper kicked the gun from Lenny's hand. Its black shoe tore loose and followed the gun into the corn stalks. Lenny's body wanted to roll away as the thing leapt at him, but his mind was too busy listening to advice from his mother and Clint. Bony fingers wrapped around his throat tightened their grip. A gritty trail of brittle flesh broke from the thing's flexing hand and fell underneath his shirt. Its bulging eyeballs, gnashing teeth, and whistled gasps floated within a black mask above Lenny's face. Lenny beat and shoved with his left arm as his throat was strangled, but this only broke away more burnt pieces of the thing's body. Soot came out of its nose and fell into Lenny's gasping mouth. The trooper's white teeth hovered over his lips as if it wanted a kiss, and this took Lenny over the edge. His mind shut down. His vision dulled. Before blacking out, Lenny saw the white glimmer of what he thought was the holy light. Heaven was dark red, and it kind of smelled like Kansas. Lenny opened his eyes, believing himself dead. The pain had eased in his shoulder, but his right arm remained mostly functionless. He rose with the intent of propping himself with his left elbow, but hit his head on the rear bumper of the station wagon. It was still night. He was still in the cornfield. He wasn't dead. This wasn't heaven, and worse. All of it. The professor, the gunfight, the burnt thing, had not been a dream. Lenny kicked himself from under the car and warily stood. First he examined his shoulder, bending toward the red glow of the station wagon's taillights for assistance. The bullet had passed cleanly through the meat near his collarbone. What little blood he'd lost was drying in a splotchy half-moon above his breast. Then he gave the station wagon a troubled stare. Somehow, the box that the professor had called a cubit had jumped back into the cargo area, had closed the rear hatch, and had turned off the engine. Finally, he noticed that the professor and trooper were gone. Lenny slipped around to the front of the station wagon, looking back across his injured shoulder. Corn rustled in the dim red taillights. An arm rose from the cover of the stalks, revealing a wrist and five fingers that were tightly wrapped around a knife. Down went the wrist, stabbing what hid in the corn stalks, then back up to reveal wrist, fist, and knife. Something screeched, sounding to Lenny like the villain Scorpio when Eastwood shot him in Dirty Harry. Then silence. The professor stood. Lenny looked for the gun and found it sitting atop the cubit in the back of the station wagon. He ran for it as the professor yelled, "No!" As Lenny fingered the steel of the pistol's barrel, a small blue spark grabbed his left pinky. There was a gentle tug that lasted for the slightest moment, an electrical tingle not unlike the static touch of hand on metal. The blue spark changed to red so quickly that Lenny was not sure the vision had occurred at all. And then the gun was in his hand. He turned it toward the approaching professor, though his eyes remained where the blue-red spark no longer existed. He leveled the gun. "The cubit," the professor said. "You touched it!" "No, you're wrong. Stand back or I'll..." Lenny then noticed the knife in the professor's hand. Its blade was quite long, and it appeared to glow in the station wagon's taillights. "Put it down," the professor demanded with a bit of exasperation and a lot of fatigue. "The gun's empty." Lenny fired. Fired again. Click, click. The professor snatched the empty gun and flung it into the back of the station wagon. "Let's get out of here," he said, then added something before he collapsed that Lenny thought was quite strange. "You've got to protect me. Help. Please." The drive would take less than 15 minutes. Lenny sat on thin remnants of the vomit he had swiped from the car seat before climbing in. His right shoulder ached, and he could lift it only enough to manage the steering wheel. The professor's injury looked more serious. A large red spot soaked his plaid shirt on the same side as Lenny's injury, but his was a few inches lower, more centered around the upper breast than the collarbone. In the dashboard's dim light, Lenny saw a drop of blood trickle from the professor's mouth. The injured man no longer gazed apprehensively into the rear-view or side-view mirrors, which meant that he was either satisfied they were no longer being chased, or that he was much too tired to care. Lenny turned onto a dirt road that led to the Bender's farm. A newspaper protruded from his mother's mailbox, and Lenny stopped to fetch it. As he exited the car, he suddenly felt that he'd made a grave mistake. He suddenly realized that he had now placed his mother in great danger, not from the professor so much as from those that were hunting him. He suddenly realized his own selfishness, how getting home and climbing into bed with a warm home-cooked meal in his tummy was all that had been on his mind. As he snatched the large Sunday edition of the Topeka Capital Journal from rusted steel, he gazed hopelessly in all directions, into the middle of the night solitude. The smell of corn rustled his nostril hairs as a thin wave of wind rolled across the darkness. He imagined a legion of burnt, ashen state troopers converging on his mother's house. He imagined Clint Eastwood leading the charge. Clint was no longer big, tough, and good-looking. He was now bubbly, torched, and grotesque. He could not see them now, but he felt that they were on their way. Somewhere beyond the corn. Somewhere, stalking. When Lenny climbed back into the station wagon, the professor was looking at him with a silent stare that acknowledged understanding. "Now you know," the stare said. 2 miles down the front road, between 100 acres of unplanted farmland, barren due to the neglect of his stepfather, sat the Bender barn and farmhouse. 2 years ago, before his father's death, the Benders had made a pretty good living on cotton and corn. Today, Lenny's mother survived as a self-employed seamstress for the Pickett's Crossing community. Her new husband, Albert, had sold nearly all of the farm animals, including several dozen head of cattle, horses, and a pair of prize-winning Labrador retrievers that had brought substantial added income to the Bender household, not to mention notoriety. Cash from this liquidation had gone to feed Albert's alcohol and gambling addictions. It would not be long before the land itself would be traded for booze, cards, and craps. It all depended on how lucky Albert remained at the Vegas tables. It all depended on whether cheating would one day get the best of him. How Lenny prayed that his stepfather's card counting would one day summon some large man named Vito to a hotel suite on the outskirts of Las Vegas with a gun in hand and bullets marked for cheating Albert Stein. Perhaps Lenny would return home for good, help his mother get the farm back on its feet, help his mother get her life back together. Right now it was impossible. Lenny was afraid of Albert. Lenny had very little courage. Lenny could not protect a fly from a spider with a can of Raid in hand. The puke at his feet was a reminder of his cowardice, a summation of his life, a putrid digestion of lost chances, lack of responsibility, and selfishness. A tear emerged and dropped to the red stain encircling his right collarbone. Crying was not a manly thing to do either. He figured it was somewhere close to 2 a.m, since the Sunday paper was already in the mailbox. Paper delivery was very efficient in Pickett's Crossing. The paper's circulation depended on early delivery to early-rising farm folk. He doubted his mother would be awake, doubted even more that she'd appreciate being intruded upon on the Lord's Day of Rest, and was certain that a stranger at her doorstep would not sit well. She trusted few people outside of the Crossing's community. Her extreme reclusion had started after his father's tragic death, and had only become worse since Albert's continuing yard sale of all that she and her husband had built together. As she'd promised Lenny in the letter he'd received a week ago, Albert would be in Vegas. It would be safe for him to come home and see his mother. He could help her clean up the barn and do a few field chores. He could share a little love that had become so elusive between them. Albert's car was not in the yard. His mother's F-150 was. As he turned to park beside the truck, the headlights revealed the Ford's rusty shade of white paint. When he switched off the station wagon, the professor sighed, closed his eyes, and propped his head against the car door window. A circular pattern of breath fog emerged against the window at the point where lips touched glass. And then he said something that made Lenny think he was dreaming again.
"You need to kill yourself," he said with shallow breaths. "When it comes out, and it will, you need to kill..."
His eyes fluttered as if he were about to pass out.
"To kill you."
Lenny's gaze shifted to the wooden box and back toward the professor.
"The cubit," the professor said. "Yes, and it won't be long."
Lenny remembered the tiny blue-red spark of electricity, no stronger than that of a static charge. He remembered his arm tingling. He remembered that the moment had lasted much longer than the split second it took for the tingle to subside. He rubbed his left hand, studied it, turned it in the palm of his right hand, which still did not work well with a bullet hole through his collarbone. When he looked up again, the knife was in the professor's hand. Lenny flinched.
"Take it," he said. "It's the only way."
Lenny immediately reached forward, but paused just inches from the blade. It glistened, as if containing a light source of its own. To take it would involve him further. He would become a murderer of children and wives. He would get his own little box, and... The professor shoved the haft of the knife into Lenny's motionless hand, and as Lenny began to study the weapon, which looked more like a dagger with a long, thin blade, three things happened simultaneously. The professor passed out, the porch light came on, and his mother emerged with shotgun in hand. She chambered a shot and pointed at the trespassing car. Lenny didn't want to emerge from the station wagon with a weapon at 2 o'clock in the morning while his mother pointed a loaded shotgun at his head, so he quickly tossed the dagger in the glove box. "Mom!" he yelled as he opened the car door. "It's me! Lenny!"